you go. All right, here today with Jani Sivonen from Finland. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm good. I'm good. This is one for the 90s kids, everyone that grew up in the 90s and a fan of swimming back then. Man, you were the man back in the 90s in the medleys. So it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Now, listen, this is kind of a historical one. You know, a lot of times I talk to current swimmers, current coaches, and you are a current coach yourself. So we'll dive into that as well. But in terms of podcasting, I like to go through the history of the sport a little bit and introduce people to people from the past who had a remarkable impact on swimming. And you were certainly one of those people, even for me growing up. I don't know if you know this, but the impact that that you had on me, I remember being at many meets and watching you compete, and I was just in awe with the way that you swam all four strokes so beautifully, and you were just such a tough competitor. And again, I don't know if you knew that, but that I was watching you back then.
Okay, first, very nice to hear, first of all. And we had a good medley racing during that time. And of course, other events also, not just the medley, also breaststroke. And so lots of development. First, swimmers were closing to 1 minute barrier. And of course, the butterfly was very much in a big turbulence because they were underwater kicking a lot and all kind of things. And but we were some good medley swimmers who took it into the new level.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, tell me about Finland, growing up in Finland as a swimmer. Why did you get into swimming in a country where I would think that swimming would be the last thing you'd want to do?
Well, probably you're right. Probably right. Yeah, we have that ice hockey is the most popular sport in Finland, like in Canada, for example. And everything started, you know, I'm born in 1974 and I was 4 years old when I started to swim at my own sport club, the sport club which had many other sports, not just swimming. However, they started swimming in my city, which is very nearby Helsinki, about half an hour driving in Helsinki, is our capital. And somehow the president of the sport club asked my father if he could join the swim squad and start to coach, even though my father doesn't have anything to do with swimming, you know. He barely can swim by himself. And he had a small background of athletics, track and field, and he has been competing a little bit in that, but basically nothing, anything serious about sport. And that's how it all started. We got the first group of swimmers, maybe 10, 15 swimmers, and I was obviously the youngest, as the age of 4. I learned to swim in a big pool also then, and the oldest fellows were maybe 15, 16 years old. So that was how it all started. Mm. So, and at the age of 5, I was in my first race in swimming, and it was 25-meter freestyle, and the time was 31.1. And that's where my competitive career started. And however, my father was, since the beginning, he was very passionate about coaching. And the president of our swim club, you know, ordered some books from USA. You know, during that time, it wasn't so simple to get any kind of learn to coach books or anything like that. So they had to order those from the USA and translate it into Finnish, because my father doesn't speak so well English. And what they ordered was the great book of James Councilman, as you know, Mark Spitz coach. And that was translated to Finnish. And there, in fact, my father started to copy all the programs. And even though he didn't understand that part of those were swimming or yards, you know, we are swimming in a meters, but however, that's everything started for my father. And in fact, already at the age of 6, maybe because of the book of the James Councilman, because he said there all the time that swimmers have to swim every day. So I was basically training swimming every day since I was 6 years old, 7 days a week.
Wow.
Not very much, 1 hour, 1.5 hours. But anyway, I was hanging around there with the older fellows who were, of course, training harder than I did. But anyway, I had that kind of background that I spent a lot of time in a pool. Wow. Not, as I told you, not like 2 hour sessions, maybe 1 hour, 1.5 hour. So 1 year before I start my elementary school, I was already working in a pool 7 days a week.
You're working 7 days a week in the pool at 6 years old, getting books from America and translating them and doing the swim sets out of the books. And this is how eventually the future world record holder came about. So, yeah, people want the blueprint sometimes. Like, how do you become a world record holder? Yeah, just to get some translated books and start copying the sets.
Yeah, of course. My father was very, very keen on coaching, and he was, of course, already other kind of books and, you know, tried to think about himself. But one of the main big issues for him was the technique, because he wasn't a swimmer by himself.
Right.
If there was, during those times, you know, for example, this counselor's book, there were good pictures, and, you know, then we had those old projectors, how to watch, you know, old swimmers, black and white pictures, you know, videos, and a little bit watch the technique. And you know, life was a little bit different during those times. Even though I was training 7 days a week in a pool, I didn't count it as a hobby for myself. You know, it was just part of the day. It was just a part of the day, you know, so when you quit the school, and soon after that, you go to the pool. And I never felt very comfortable, you know, just go to the training. Only since I was 14 or something like that, then I started to understand that I might have a small chances to do something in the future. But however, I had other sports also. In Finland, of course, we have a snow, so skiing was one important during the winter times. And then the athletics, and especially pole vault, was something what I really loved to do. We were, my home was just next to the, you know, track and field yard, and I was spending all my free time, you know, in that place. And pole vault was something what I really, really loved. And in fact, at the age of 12, I was in the statistics, I was number one in Finland in that also, even though swimming was my main sport.
Wow, that's crazy. Pole vault. I wouldn't have picked you for a pole vaulter, but when did you recognize the real talent then? Because, you know, when I eventually get to see you swim, I mean, you're a beautiful technician. I mean, everything's flowing. It seems to me like you had this natural gift as well, even though you're doing the training and the work. I mean, your breaststroke was absolutely gorgeous. You had an incredible freestyle. You could hold your own in the fly and the backstroke, but it seemed to me like you're a natural breaststroker. When did you really understand that you had a talent for this?
Yeah, I was, like I told you, I was trained quite often weekly, you know, since I was young. And it was the 1988 Olympics in Seoul. I was watching those nighttime then here in Finland. And something came up on my mind that I decided that that's the games where I want to be one day. So during that time, I was 14 years old, and I had been the best of my age group in Finland each year. But something happened inside me when I saw Tomas Darni swimming and Matti Ondi swimming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, great 1988 stars, Tom Chaker, who just named, you know, there were such a great games. And something happened, and everything started to work very easily for me. You know, like I told you earlier, it was a little bit difficult. I didn't enjoy so much go to the pool and practice with my father or with the team. It was just part of my day. But then I understood that maybe I have a shot, you know. Maybe I should focus this on a little bit more, like mentally. Of course, I was training every day, but, you know, I got the mind with me also since the 1988. And since that, everything started to go very, very smoothly, and everything changed, you know. Like, I really wanted to be at the Olympics one day. During that time, 1988, I didn't understand or realize that the next Olympics already will be very big ones for me. I was thinking already the 96 Olympics. During the 1988 time, we didn't know during that time that they're going to be in Atlanta. But however, when I was 14 and the Seoul Olympic Games was a big momentum mentally for me.
Right. Yeah. So you have this, you have this impact. You're watching Thomas Dagny, you're watching Matt Biondi, and just like any kid, you start dreaming, you start thinking, that's where I want to be. There. And I think a lot of Olympic swimmers have had a very similar impact. And
yes,
but you know, from 14 to 18, like you said, massive changes, massive swings. You go from a kid that's just dreaming about it, who's just really a 14-year-old kid, to 4 years later, you're competing at the Olympics and you're contesting for medals. So like, in that 4 year period, other than the mental switch, what happened for you that enabled you to go from a kid to this ultimately a man that could compete at the Olympics?
Yeah, that's where the biggest improvement for me happened. And if we think so, that as the age of 14, I think I spent 200 IM short course meters to 18, something like that. And then the next, my first Olympics, it was 201 in a long course. So what happened at the age of 16, especially from the 14, 15 to 16, I started to grow, physically grow. Mm. I started to grow as a man. And something also very important happened, you know. I finished my elementary school as the age of 16. In Finland, you normally finish there and then you go either to high school or somewhere else. And during that time, we didn't have that kind of opportunity. We were living the year 1990 that you could choose, like you can make the high school like in 4 or 5 years. So basically, right, you had to manage it in 2.5 years, which right, was basically quite difficult if you knew to train a lot. Mm. And so I decided that I'm going to have 1 year off from school at the age of 16. And at the same time, let's say it this way, before that time, I was training only still that once a day swimming.
Right.
But during that summer, when I finished the school at the age of 16, we switched so that I started to be twice in a pool in a day. And I also got my first day off in a week from swimming for 10 years because I started at the age of 6 and now 16. So now I got my Sunday off. Wow. And of course, we started dry land training and that kind of also. If I say so, when I was 15, maybe my maximum training kilometers were maybe 5 kilometers per session.
Mm.
And when we switch that to the twice a day, we immediately at the age of 16, we raise it to 6 kilometers in the morning, 6 kilometers in the afternoon.
Mm.
And at the age of 17, we went already to 8 or 9 kilometers. And basically that was the maximum for us. Of course, we did sometimes 100 kilometers weeks, but it didn't work for me. 8 kilometers was very, very, very common. But anyway, that, you know, we doubled the amount of swimming. And I was able to relax between the practices and my physical growing. I think those were the main reasons.
Right, right. Were you still with your father at that stage or had you changed coaches by then?
My father has been my coach always.
Oh, okay. Yes. Wow. All the way through world records, Olympics, world championships, everything.
Yes, all the way since I was 4.
Wow. And how?
For 28 years.
28 years, wow. How did you manage that relationship where obviously you're getting better and, you know, he doesn't have a background, so he's learning as he's going as well, so he's getting better as well. But, you know, figuring out, you know, first of all, just taking this young kid and then all of a sudden you're a man and you're competing at the world stage, you're competing against the best in the world. So how was the relationship between father and son and coach and athlete?
Yes, that's very, very, very common question for me. And but however, our relationship worked very well, even though I was living at home up to I was 19, 20, something like that. But we didn't have any kind of rules. But the way we had it at home was so that when we finished our practice, it didn't matter was it in the morning or afternoon or the dry land session, we basically never talk about swimming at home.
Mm.
And we both really enjoyed that, you know, we just didn't, we were, you know, we were like a professionals already then, and we really wanted to achieve something big, you know, basically to be the best in the world. And that's a high pressure also, as well as you know. And when you get back home, basically you don't want to talk about the swimming anymore. It right. didn't matter. Did it go bad or good, the practice? Yeah, we fight with my dad once in a week. I had 12 swimming sessions in a week. And let's say at least once in a week, we had a fight, and the fight in a pool. And the fight was always about if he made me a set, what I have to do, and he made me some target times, what I have to reach. And I felt that I cannot do that today. And of course, I started to try those times and those targets and so on. But if I couldn't reach those, then he was very angry for me. And once a week, I was angry back. And usually it ended so that either we finished the practice, or then we just swam easily the rest of the whatever there was left. But anyway, it was about once in a week. But we never had any kind of big fights or big issues that we have to discuss later or something. And I think one of the reasons why it works so well is also because we became successful.
Right.
That heals many things.
Did you have other people in your group as well? Was he training other people at the same time?
Yes. We have had many, many. I think my father has coached 15 to 20 adults, Finnish nationals, also one swimmer to Barcelona Olympics and many to European championships and so on. But I'm the biggest name of what he has coached. And also, if we go a little bit back to the history of my swimming, I was very young, I was the youngest of the group whom I was coaching with. And as we talked earlier, you know, my father was coping those James Councilmas practices, Mark Spitz, basically what he did. And so I think my father spoiled tens of swimmers by wrongdoing, you know, very heavy and very, very too loaded trainings and everything, you know. But during the time, he learned how to handle us swimmers and how to handle each swimmer and so on, because we have many distances also.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. So in the lead up then, I guess, to your first Olympics, how did you end up qualifying and going into this first Olympics? Talk to me about the 92 Olympics.
Yeah, the year before, 1991, we had the European Championships. It was my first long course meet for adults, and I was fifth in a 400 IM then, by the time 424, and I was also in a final in a 200 IM. So, but they didn't go well that, and so we were trying a little bit different kind of tapering for those games, and it was too long for me. So basically, I lost a little bit my fitness. That was the thing. But my record was from that season 202.90 in 1991, and going to the Olympics Barcelona, it was Finnish nationals. I think it was about 1 month before Barcelona Olympics. I made 200 IM 201.7 or 201.8, something like that, and that was during that time anyway, top 10 in the world, and maybe top 5, maybe so high. And also my colleague Antti Kasvila, the great freestyler, was in a great shape during that time, and he was doing maybe 149, 148 already at the nationals, and so we're in a good shape. So what happened, one funny thing in fact happened at the Barcelona Olympics. I was sitting next to Antti Kasvio in a bus when we were heading to our first practice of the Olympic pool, and we were quite nervous, obviously, you know. And Antti was asking me that, Jani, what are you aiming for at these games? Then I answered him that the final would be great. Antti was still a moment quiet, and then he turned around back to me and said, Jani, no, you know what we want. Later on, I understood what he meant, because he got the bronze medal. And he was very focused, and anyway, we had the heats during that time. It was all the heats and the finals, you know, same day. And I did my PB 201.1, and I shocked myself and basically everybody, at least in the Finnish team. I qualified number one to final.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was completely shocked. And suddenly I understood that, oh my God, in the final, it's going to be the guys who I've been following in 1988 Olympics. They are now around me, like Thomas Darney. And I have to tell you, when we were in a calling room before the final, I don't think I have been never as nervous as I was there, because I was standing next to those great medalist swimmers, you know. In this kind of moment, you know, we usually have very small swimming team. And in these kind of moments, it would be a great benefit to be in a big team like you have in OCS or Australia or USA, you know, to really kick those youngs forward. So I did what I was able to do in the final, and I was 1/10 slower than in the morning, even though I didn't swim all out in the morning. And but I think it was only about my, you know, greenness. I was completely too rookie for that.
Yeah.
And I lost, I think I lost 2/10 the bronze and maybe half a second the gold medal from Darney. And however, the third was my great friend Attila Zen. We are the same age, you know, we have been the same European Junior Championships, and he was already then a little bit ahead of me. But I was very disappointed, of course. And my friend got a medal, Antti got a medal, bronze medal. And so after the Olympics, I took maybe 2-3 months off from swimming, and I was very disappointed. And suddenly the motivation started to come back again. And then I decided so that I will never lose 200 IM again as long as I swim. And that held for 39 races, 4 years, until Atlanta Olympic final and Attila Cene.
Yeah, well, we can talk about that, because I just watched that race myself. I was like, oh my gosh, that was a crazy race. But like you said, you make another mental switch. So the first one I feel like is at 14, where you're like, I want to be an Olympian. Next, you go to the Olympics and you're like, I want to be the most dominant medley swimmer in history. And you make that mental switch again. So you have a couple of months off. Now, the period we're talking about now between the decision you've made and you absolutely destroying the world record, where you go 158.1, is only about a year and a half. So in that year and a half, you just go crazy. How you go mental in practice. Is that what happens?
Yeah. After that break the first Olympics, I really needed that break, the 2-3 months. You know, we were training very heavily for the first Olympics, and of course the results, if you fought at the Olympic Games, is not bad, but if you have chances even for the gold, then it feels a defeat. Right. But however, after that 2 months, I really started to train again, and like I told, I made a decision that I'm not going to lose this race anymore, ever again. And I started to practice. If we did like 7 kilometers around that time per session before Barcelona Olympics, then we went up to 8 and 9 kilometers, sometimes even 10 kilometers.
So that was the answer then. The answer was, I just have to train more. I have to train harder. Yes. Is that what the answer was?
Yes. During that time, I was so mentally so strong after that big defeat that I really believe that I'm able to swim, for example, 12 kilometers in the morning, 12 kilometers in the evening. But I never, in fact, even tried that, because I understood that at least in my body, I cannot take that. But however, I was very focused, and I put everything in my life just going for the world record and be the best medley swimmer in the world. And first time when it really paid off was 1993, when we had the European Championships and in Sheffield. And first race I had was the 400 IM. My previous best time was 4:22. And we went to final. There was Marcelo Wouda, first time I basically was racing against him. And then there was Thomas Darni and me. And basically we three were only the medal contenders who there were. And we had a great race with Thomas. And Thomas took the European title and he beat me with 1 or 2 tenths of the second anyway. But we swam very good 4:15. So I dropped 7 seconds from my 400 IM personal bet. So it really tells that I had really worked very well during the last year. And at the same games and during that time, if you remember, 200 IM was always on the last day. And then we had the 200 IM coming, and then I knew that now or never I have a chance to win Thomas Darni, because obviously 200 meter was a better event for me than the 400. And my personal best was still from the previous Olympics, 201.1. But somehow Thomas had injured his shoulder and he never showed up to the heats. But I was racing against Attila Chen. And we had a good race with Attila. And I swam first time under 2 minutes and only 14 hundredths out from Thomas' world record. And that was the moment when I understood that I really have a chance to win an Olympic gold medal.
Right. Yeah. Massive swimming there. And then the following year in Rome is where you really come out and smash the world record. Rome to me is such an iconic world championships. The 1994 Rome World Championships, with everything that was going on, it was a great one for Australia. You know, you had Kieran Perkins, kind of, that was his coming out party as well. But then you had the Chinese and all the debacle with what was going on with them. And then you're absolutely smashing the world records. It seemed like it was one of those meets where world records were just like going left and right. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And I don't know, except of course, obviously we understand the Chinese reason, because I think five or six out of the world record ladies there were caught by doping 1 month after those games. But like Kieran, he was in a great superb shape. And 3:43 with the small speedos, you know, it's amazing time compared to today what they're doing.
Right.
And maybe something what affected positively for the great result what happened there was that that race was held in September. So everybody had a very long season. And during that time, basically, we didn't need to be throughout the year in a good shape. Of course, you are in a good shape, but you are not your sharpest. And it was the short course season and the long course season. And the long course season was very long now because it was in September. So people really had the time, you know, to really develop their body and, you know, really build up their fitness for that. So I think that's one of the reasons why the result, at least for me, was so good. Because if you think about the year before, we had the European Championship in August and basically 2 weeks holiday and then it continued. So I had more than 12 months time to prepare for that games, and it's a lot.
Yeah, it was an incredible games. But talk me through the world record itself. So you come in fully prepared, you've got this mentality, you've backed the training now, you've got some results at the Europeans, but this is the one where you kind of put it all together. And like I said, I watched this video earlier today and you just absolutely dominated this race. You dominated the whole world. I mean, it was kind of like a Michael Phelps type swim, you know, but how did the race feel for you? Talk me through the race.
Yeah, I had my own goals and my goal was to swim 157.7. I knew that my shape should be something like that. I made a couple of mistakes, which caused that basically, but you never know. But however, that whole world championship started with the 400 IM. 4 weeks or 5 weeks before the world champ started, I had a race in Sweden and it was very cold weather, maybe only plus 10 degrees, an outdoor pool. And I swam 200 IM 159.7. So I was very happy. It was my second best all time. And not even tapered yet, then I knew that there is nobody who can beat me in a 200. So now we need to, at the end, we need to focus only for the 400 because it's going to be Tom Dolan there.
Mm.
And Eric Namesnik also. And basically the tapering was focusing only for the 400 because we knew that I have it in my body anyway, the world record, and maybe 157 time. So 400, I did good for 13 and I was second, and Tom Dolan did a world record, which was great race anyway. But of course, when you get the silver and you're aiming for the gold, you are still hungry.
Mm.
So after the morning heats in 200 IM, I think I did 200 something, a little bit under 201. And I felt so easily. I felt so easy. You know, I was only thinking after the morning heats that maybe that time is even enough for the world title. Mm. And because during that year, for example, Attila Chen wasn't in his best shape. He had been sick. And but anyway, the race went so that I have had, since I've been young, I have had a problem with my heart. You know, sometimes my heart rate goes very high, even though if I would be sitting down. So before the race, I start this, you know, rhythm problem. Mm. So basically, I'm during those years, I wasn't nervous about the race. I was only about the nervous, does my heart problem go away? Usually it went. A couple of occasions it didn't go, but usually it went. I was more nervous that than I was about the race. Mm. And it went away quite early. And when we started to marching in, I remember the German swimmer Christian Keller, who was in the final also, whispered in my ear that, good luck for the world record, Jani.
He was trying to get in your head.
However, yeah, the race went almost as I planned. I did a couple of mistakes only. After the 100 turn, you know, I came too quickly underwater in a breaststroke because I felt so good. I just wanted to swim fast. Mm. You know, I lost maybe a tenth there. And I also in the freestyle, like, you know, if you watch it again, you can see that I was in a too hurry. You know, I didn't focus on strokes or anything. I was just keen on to watch what the time was going to be.
But I felt great. You're just attacking the wall, like, I'm going to win this thing.
Yeah. I was in a planning how to raise my hands, you know, when I...
Oh, so you're swimming into the wall and you're thinking about how I'm going to celebrate.
Yeah.
You know you're winning by a lot when you can start thinking about the celebration 25 meters out. You know? Yeah. That's hilarious. It's also funny, you know, as swimmers, I get this with young swimmers a lot. They say, oh, I swam pretty good, but I wanted to go faster. And I say, listen, you'll break a world record one day and you'll still want to go faster. Now I'm talking to a guy that broke a world record and he says, oh, I should have gone faster.
That's true.
You know, we never are satisfied with the time.
We always think
we can go better. But listen, it was a phenomenal race. And then did that change anything for you back in Finland? Like, did you become a superstar then? Like, I'm sure people in your country knew you, but like, did that change things?
Yeah, that changed. And also the year earlier and 2 years earlier when Antti took a bronze medal. Yeah, we were doing that time. We were superstars in Finland. Yeah, that changed. Of course, the world champs were the biggest impact for our careers. And I was also during that year, I was elected as athlete of the year in Finland.
Oh, wow. So in terms of what we know as fame, is it similar there? Like when you walk down the street, are people staring at you, asking for autographs, or, you know, wanting to talk to you? Like, is it very similar in Finland?
Yes, it's the same. It's the same. And of course, we had fans during that time also, you know, always when we came from the major meets and we had medals, you know, we came to the airport, there was usually hundreds of fans waiting for us in the airport.
Wow.
And still people recognize us, you know.
Yeah. So what about the relationship with your dad? You said you moved out at the age of 20, you become a world champion, world record holder, superstar in your home country. Does this change the relationship with you and your dad in any way?
No, no, in fact, only what happened that for me, if you think about it, what the most important thing was what happened after that Rome World Champs was that I felt too good. You know, I was a little bit out of the motivation. You know, when you have the momentum, you put everything in it, like I did that 2 years before the Rome. If I could change something, I could change years a little bit. You understand? I could. Yeah. I would like to get the momentum so that you have the Olympic year coming. So I understood that I have to train even more and more and more, but it didn't go so.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting that you say that, right? Like, because you're a coach now, and you know, I talk to athletes from the past all the time. I talked to John Sieben the other day, for instance, right? John Sieben swam the Olympic gold medal in the 200 butterfly in 84. And from what I could gather is that you couldn't work hard. It was impossible, humanly impossible, to work harder than he did, right? Like the work that he did, it was like he pushed and pushed and pushed. And here you are saying that you took everything to a whole nother level, and you pushed harder, and you're going 158 in the 200 IM, which is at that time incredible, and you're training as hard as humanly possible. So, like, how are we swimming 154 in the 200 IM now? Like, you know, as a coach, you've seen this evolution. So, like, you can't just keep pushing and say, okay, I did 8 kilometers, now I'm going to do 9 kilometers, now I'm going to do 10 kilometers. So, like, where has the evolution then in training been, you think, where people are getting faster now?
Yeah, there are many reasons, of course. A small effect is with the new patch, but it's not explaining that. The thing is that we can more specialize for each event what we want to do, in where we want to be on the top. You know, if you're a 200 IM or 400 IM, you can be either of them, or you can be swim everything, all of those, if you want. But what's happening inside that 8 kilometers? What's happening inside that 6 kilometers? That has changed a lot, very, very much. And also, it's good to take all that, you know, extra, what we basically don't need, it's good to take out.
Right.
And during that 1990s, as you remember, it was still mostly about the lap by lap mileages. Still, it started to change, but not so much. But that's, I think, it's the biggest revolution of basically coaching. What has happened?
Happened throughout
as long as I remember. And we can see the swimmers' profiles also. You know, when you're having a look at them, you know, you really can see that they are focusing on in only basically one or two. But swimming is that kind of sport that. Anyway, swimming allows somehow, like Michael Phelps or some backstrokers who can do a good butterfly, you know, like a multi-talents. We still have a lot of those, but not so much swimmers anymore who can do from the 100 to 1500.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely more specialized. We have, you know, our new French IM swimmer. You know, what's his name again?
Marchand.
Yeah, exactly, Marchand.
I was racing with his father.
Yeah, he used to race his father, right, Marchand? Yeah, Xavier. Xavier was a good medley swimmer, and now his son is the you know, potential Olympic champion in Paris next year, Marchand. Yes. Oh my God, what a talent he is, hey?
He's really talented, and I think he you know, big impact for him was also, I'm just following from the side, that he chose, you know, Bob Bowman as a coach.
Right.
It's also, you understand, it's a big effect, you know, to whom you are going to be coached with. What is good for you? You know, you understand what I mean?
Yeah, right.
For him, everything, you know, locked up and together, and we can see the results, amazing results. He could be a world record holder in a breaststroke also.
Right. Well, listen, you know, in terms of what you learned and what you went through, you're lane four in 92, you come back in 96, and you're lane four again, you're the world record holder. And this may be a lesson for Marchand in some respects, right? Like, he's going in as the favorite. I'm sure you went in as the favorite. You're in lane four what can happen in an Olympic final? Like what happened in 96 for you, we see lane one takes off and basically leads from start to finish and kind of shocks everybody a little bit. And I'm assuming he shocked you as well. I mean, you're the favorite, you're in lane four, you're the world record holder. And then we have this dart out in lane one. Is there a lesson here for people that are in that position next year? Like Marchand might be in Paris next year as the favorite. Could this happen to him?
You know, Olympics are very special games. First of all, they're only once in 4 years. And secondly, once in 4 years, you have to be during that day, during that time, everything have to be in the right place.
Right.
And if I think about my mental progress during those games, you know, I had a very bad games. So basically 1 year earlier at the European Championships, with those times, I would have won 2 gold in Atlanta.
Right.
But like I said a little bit earlier, I start to be out of the motivation, out of the momentum when the last 2 years before Atlanta. And if you think so, that I swam 2,700 kilometers in 12 months before Rome, 94. And now the last year before Atlanta, I was swimming only 1,600 kilometers. Mm-hmm. So basically, it tells about the motivation. I wasn't there anymore. But I was so much ahead with my times with the others that it really, really saved me, you know, for the medals, for example, the silver in Atlanta.
Right.
So after the heats in Atlanta, I qualified number one. So it was my 39th. Heat or final victory in 4 years. So I was very happy. And I was fishing for the 14th one, of course, which never came. And only person who I was worried was Attila. And I knew he was in, was it lane number one, I think? Yeah, lane number one.
Lane one, yeah.
I knew he's going to go out fast. But the problem is, because I wasn't in a shape what I was like 2 years ago or almost a year ago, I wasn't able to go out as fast as I usually wanted to go because I wasn't in a good shape enough, you know. So after the 100 turn, I was watching underwater underwater press show. Right. I was watching, oh my God, this can't be true. Attila so much ahead.
Mm.
Then I just, you know, basically closed my eyes and started to do the breaststroke like I usually did in 200 IM. I took it all out, you know, in a breaststroke.
Right.
I took it, I started to swim as I would do a 50 meter breaststroke. So I did that. So after the last turn underwater in a freestyle, I noticed, oh my God, I have reached him maybe 1 meter and that's not enough. Then I basically put only my head down and I was wishing that Attila is mega tired, which he was. But not enough. At the end, of course, I didn't watch underwater, you know, when I was touching the wall, so I was watching on the scoreboard what was the situation. But as an athlete, you take it as a race. You win or you lose. It's not it's not your whole world, you know. You either win or you lose.
Right.
If you are mentally, you understand what I mean. If you are mentally there, you know. You understand winning or losing, and basically it's only sport, even though it's the biggest thing at the moment what can happen. So then there is only one swimmer who is faster than you, and that's it. Of course, in Finland, it was a huge disappointment for the whole nation.
Really? The nation was disappointed?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
But not in Hungary.
Hungarians were happy.
Yeah.
Oh man, he attacked.
He really attacked.
It was an interesting strategy, right? Just attack.
Yeah. And I have talked with Attila after that, and basically his coach, who has passed away already, told him that this is the only chance what you have against Jani. Otherwise, you cannot win the gold.
Wow.
And he was right. Thomas Cecchi was the coach, also coach for Thomas Darni.
Wow. I love that tactic of like, listen, we can't beat this guy unless we change something. We've got to attack.
Yes.
And he attacked.
Yes. Yes, and that's something, you know, like you were talking about the lessons about the Olympics. This is a good lesson for many people, that anything can happen at the Olympic final, even for the world record holder and unbeatable for 4 years. There can be a guy who makes another kind of tactic, and if the number one guy doesn't trust the moment enough to yourself, things can happen like it did.
Right. Yeah, and I'm not saying by any means this will happen to Leon next year in Paris, but all the pressure, like you said, the whole nation is going to be waiting for this gold medal, and there's a lot of pressure on that, isn't there?
It's true, and that's why if we are thinking about Leon, you know, that's very good that he's in that kind of place where he's training these times, that he really, really can get everything, you know, mentally prepared well and, you know, have a good racing and everything. But anyway, they are the Olympics and in the home country, you know. I can only imagine.
Yeah. Well, you and I crossed paths at a couple of World Short Course Championships. I went to the World Short Course in 2000, where you became world champion there, and then I was in 2002 in Moscow as well. So the first 2000 was Greece, 2002 was Moscow. So I get to watch you. So this is me as a swim fan. I'm standing, you know, I'm a 50 freestyler. So could I ever compete in a 200 IM. But I remember standing on the sideline and watching you compete, and I just remember, like, everything was so clean. Like you were one of those guys that just looked effortless. Like your turns were good, your underwaters were good, your strokes just seemed like they all connected very well. It didn't seem like you had a bad stroke in you. It to me, when I watched you, it was just beautiful. Like it was like poetry, just reading poetry. Like you swam beautiful. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah, I had my problems. You know, my biggest problem in the medley was, if you compare to today's medley swimmers, was the backstroke.
Right.
And if you compare the, you know, splits, I'm far away from them. Even though if I was swimming short course backstrokes, I had many, I broke many times 50 and 100 meter European record, and even 200 meter was 153. It was during that time quite far, close to the world record, in fact, during those years. But however, you know, also long course would have been good if I would have ever tried that in a good shape, but I never got it working in a backstroke. I would have needed to be definitely swim like in a 200 IM in a long course under 30 seconds. I never was able to do that. It was 30.4, 30.5, something like that, even in a world record swim. But in another point of view, the breaststroke was then also, it was quite good there, 33.4. Yeah.
Who would you compare yourself to in more of the future swimmers? To me, I kind of like compare you to Ryan Lochte in terms of like having all four strokes really nice and complete, and the way you competed. You're very similar to Ryan Lochte, I thought. I don't know. What do you think?
Maybe some similarities there. Yeah. And medley, probably for... If I think about Ryan, if I think about myself, the medley was the only suitable for us. Maybe if we would have focused on the only part of line, only backstroke, right, on the breast of three, we would have never reached those, what we did.
Right. Yeah. The medley was the complete package for you. You could swim the other strokes, but the medley was the complete package. Yeah, I love that. Well, that's awesome. So when did you decide to... stop, and how did you get into coaching?
Well, I was 32. I quit in 2006. So 2004 was the last Olympics for me.
We quit at the same time. 2006.
Yeah. And basically I did. So we had the short course European Championships in Helsinki 2006 in December. And during that year in March, I sent a text message to my father that I will quit. Then he sent me a text message back that you could have even called.
you could even call your dad telling you quit. It's just a text.
But anyway, I called him. So I finished my career there, and I knew already 2 years before that it's just a matter of time. I started to have big problems with my shoulders, and I knew that only chance to get those back is is to operate them. And then I knew at this age, there's no reason to operate. And I'm racing against Michael Phelps and Ryan Lochte. So maybe it's time to give up. My time is past. And so, yeah, but it went quite easily, you know, the ending by itself. But however, later on, it's quite a long time ago. I have noticed that I think 5, 6, 7 years, I was a little bit depressed. I think so. I was able to work with coaching. I worked for Eurosport also as a commentator. I had the touch of the, you know, the normal life. I knew all the time that sport is, it's only one part of your life. But anyway, later on, when you, now time has gone so much further and you can look the things a little bit more objective, you know, I think I was a bit depressed. So I didn't understand my own place in like a new society, you know. I was still mirroring myself as an athlete, and I was too much thinking what people are thinking about me.
Well, it's common, right? Like for some for swimmers that have a lot of success and that are so single-minded, you know, when it comes to the end, it's very difficult to detach yourself from that and see something different in yourself.
Yeah, that's true. But however, that went away also, and since that, I really have enjoyed my life.
Yeah. Well, what about the coaching then? How did you decide to go into coaching?
Now, basically, the first 2 years when I quit, I didn't want to watch any kind of sport from TV because you start to get a little bit nervous. There's a situation that kind of that somebody might win and so on. So, but anyway, then it started to come back, you know, the feeling that maybe it's good to bring and give all this knowledge and experience what I have to the another generation. I have no reason to keep those inside me, you know. So that's where it all started. I don't have any swimmer who I'm particularly coaching. I'm traveling around Finland and visiting swim clubs, and that's the thing. So you understand, I don't have to be in a competitions in the weekends, and I don't have to be early in the morning.
So it's more like an advisory role, is it?
Yeah, and swim clinics and all kind of this. And I really enjoy.
Yeah, I do the same thing, Yanni. I do the same thing. I travel around, do swim clinics, do some advising, and I'm out of it too. I'm not on the pool deck every day. I obviously have this podcast where I talk to you know, swimmers and coaches, but Yeah. I'd love to come to Finland one day. If you ever want to invite me out, I'd love to come out and do some work.
Definitely, yes, and I will invite you.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Right here, right now.
I'd like that. That'd be fantastic. Actually, I swam in Finland once. I swam there. So 1995, I think it is. There was a World Cup short course in Finland,
yes,
right?
We had 2 years World Cup there, and I have one very special victory there, 100-meter freestyle for me.
Oh, okay. Well, then we may have even raced each other. There you go. So you
maybe.
Beat me.
Okay. Yeah.
You beat me at my own event. Thank you, Yanni. Yeah, I think that was a very memorable. All I remember from that was how cold it was. I remember going from the bus to the hotel was about a 10-meter sprint, and I remember like you had to physically sprint to get from the bus to the hotel, otherwise you would just freeze. It's so cold in Finland.
Hey, okay, we'll do so that I will invite you during the winter time, and we will have the clinic in Lapland. They're very nice pool towels.
Beautiful. Yeah, I would love that very much. That would be a great honor for me, for sure. Anytime, please.
Yes.
Well, listen, I appreciate this catching up. It's been a lot of fun just recording your history. This is what I really get pleasure out of. I really get pleasure out of talking to athletes from the past and just getting their stories. You know, you have an incredible story. And like I said, you made a big impact on me. I didn't even really know who you were. I just knew this incredible athlete from Finland and the impact that you had. Just watching you and watching you compete. And I think you're just a big part of swimming history, man. So thank you for everything that you've done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And it was a great honor to be on the program.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Yanni. Take care, my friend.
Thank you.
Bye.